Hola and welcome to the Fastest Lap podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we discuss the hectic Mexican GP with a very angry Sebastian Vettel and a new interpretation of Turn 1. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone, what a crazy end it has been to the race. Three drivers being in P3 after the finish, but now we know it is Ricciardo who should have been on the podium. But yeah, going back to the beginning of the weekend, Nico Rosberg, really it was the question, can Rosberg secure his title in Mexico? And yeah, only after the free practice sessions we could already see that it isn't really his weekend. Were you surprised as well, Fergal? I mean, he was so far off the pace of Hamilton, it was quite unusual.
Yeah, I didn't really think he was going to win the championship at Mexico. I think that the odds were just too much against him. But yeah, he was off the pace of his teammate Hamilton pretty much the whole way through the weekend. About 2 or 3 tenths off
or even 5 tenths. I mean, it was quite huge, the gap.
Yeah, we've kind of seen it before too. You know, Hamilton just turns up and does his A game and performs well, and Rosberg just can't keep up. And I think what's good about Rosberg and what I like about it is he acknowledges that Lewis is actually, yeah, overall a better driver than him, because
I can't understand it. I mean, if you're an F1 driver, you're so focused on winning, your only goal is to win, and if you really acknowledge that a driver is better than you, in my opinion, it shows some kind of weakness. I mean, in my opinion, every F1 driver should believe that he is the fastest driver on the grid.
Yeah, I do agree with you, but I really do think Rosberg does think Hamilton might have the edge over him, but he still believes he can beat him. I mean, I remember seeing David Coulthard a while ago talking about his career, and he said that he knew when he lost his world championships to, you know, whoever it was, like who was his teammate in 1998-99 champion? That's gonna annoy me. I'll think about some point in the podcast anyway. But yeah, he said that he just knew that he wasn't as quick as the driver, as his teammate, and as his rivals. But he just knew it when he got out of the car. So I think, yeah, it's strange to see Rosberg so vocal about it. But yeah, maybe that's just his style. Maybe it's a bit of reverse psychology on his part.
maybe. But it really, I mean, I would love seeing him winning the championship for once, to have some kind of variation, of course. But it really annoys me every time he says something like, yeah, Lewis was just quicker than me, and yeah, I was just wasn't on the pace today, and so on. It really annoys me because, yeah, me myself, I'm very ambitious, and I always want to achieve the maximum, and I just can't understand it, you know. So yeah, quite strange, but very, very difficult start to the weekend for Rosberg. And only in the last minute, I mean, in his first run in qualifying, yeah, going forward to qualifying, in his first run in Q3, he was only, what was he, P6, P5 or something?
P5, and
only in the last minute he really saved his day and saved his race, basically, by going P2. And he said something, or the team said, that he had really trouble to get his tires up to temperature. Of course, Mexico, the track temperatures were pretty low compared to what we are used to. But yeah, in the last lap, he managed to switch the tires on and got in the range of 2/10 of Hamilton, who himself said that he messed up the lap. But yeah, Do you also think that that was really the lap that saved Rosberg's weekend?
Yeah, I think so. After that, it was just kind of, well, I don't want to say easy for him, but he,
Well,
yeah,
he's
it would have been,
in a Mercedes, so it's easy for
yeah,
him. You can say that.
yeah. Well, yeah, life would have been a lot more difficult for him if he hadn't have been able to get onto the front row. And we've seen that in Malaysia, I think it was Malaysia, where he his first lap wasn't good, and it was somewhere in fifth or sixth, and then he on his final run he produced the lap that counted. And credit to Rosberg, I think that's his strength. Actually, he performs quite well under pressure. I mean, I know it's not, you know, pole position, but you know, it's it does prove that he didn't, you know, freeze up and think, oh no, this is where it's gonna all go wrong for me. No, he just kept his head down and got onto the front row.
Yeah, you're right. It was definitely Malaysia where he made a mistake on his first run, and then, yeah, as you said, under pressure, he performed then. And with that lap, he secured P2 on the grid, which meant that he was able to start alongside, well, of course, alongside his teammate, but also alongside Max Verstappen. And yeah, going to the race, to the race start, it was basically chaos everywhere. I mean, I was watching it live and I thought, oh, there is something happening, and there's something happening again, and what's going on. I mean, first of all, I thought Hamilton had a pretty bad start. It looked from the front, yeah, it looked like he bucked down or something, but in the second stage of the pull where he somehow got drive again. Did you see that as well?
Yeah, you know, at every race start, I kind of just focus on the front row and see who gets the better start. And initially, the initial launch, Rosberg did get the better start. And yeah, but I think just going through the gears, I think Hamilton just managed to pull ahead. And yeah, like you said, it was all hectic down at turn one and beyond.
Yeah, Hamilton, he placed his right front brake and tried to brake for turn one and locked up his right front tire. And yeah, he just invented a new line for turn one, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I seen him go across the grass and I was like, okay, see what's happening behind. And then I seen Rosberg and Verstappen touch, and I was like, that's not going to end well. And then Rosberg met his own line through turn one, or through turn two even. So yeah, that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, and both drivers, of course, Hamilton, I mean, he gained a really big advantage. I mean, you could see the camera cutting to the next straight, and he was miles ahead of the field.
Yeah, which kind of got me thinking, you know, it got me thinking two things. How bad are his tires after that lockup? And did he gain like a huge gap? And it looked pretty clear to me that he did. Yeah, and I thought, well, will this change things or not? You know, will Charlie Whiting, you know, come in with some sort of rule for that, or the stewards come in to rule out that advantage?
Yeah, well, there are really two ways to look at it. I mean, first of all, looking at it from maybe the Hamilton fan perspective, you could say, or you could argue, well, he was in front, he locked up his tire. Of course, he gained an advantage by cutting the corner, but in the end, the safety car came out, so his advantage was vanished again. And also, if he had been given a 5-second penalty or something, in the end, there wouldn't have been any difference for the race result. On the other hand, if you look at it from a different perspective, traditional track limit perspective, let's say it like that, on normal tracks, you would have a gravel trap or even a wall in Monaco or something or somewhere else. So with that lockup, he would have ended up in the wall, or he should have turned the car around 90 degrees and go back to the track, and then he would have lost. Yeah, I assume he would have lost P1. I guess, of course, if Rosberg and Verstappen were touching as well as you said, but I think he would have lost that place surely. So, yeah, I can understand why they didn't give him a penalty, but on the other hand, we will get to that later in the podcast. The consistency actually revealed
why they didn't give Hamilton a podcast, or why they gave him a penalty. I'm not sure if you've seen that.
I saw the headline, but I didn't read it because I thought, Fertl is coming to the podcast. He'll tell me, surely.
Yeah, I have all my information.
Good. So tell me.
Well, yeah, pretty much. They said that they looked at the telemetry right after he went across the grass, and it appeared that he lifted off enough immediately. But I mean, you could see there was a gap, and I'm pretty sure the gap only came down when the safety car was released. So, yeah, again, I'm not really sure.
Are they kidding me? I mean, did you see the onboard? You could really hear he was on throttle going over the grass. He didn't lift, he was on throttle. And what do they expect? Do they expect him to go full throttle through the grass or something? I mean, lifting off is a very bad argument, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. I mean, yeah, I don't really know what to say about it, to be honest, because you can look at it from different perspectives. But I think at the end of the day, I think Hamilton was strong enough this weekend that he would have won the race regardless.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and so I wouldn't have made any difference, the penalty. But yeah, we touched on it already. Rosberg and Verstappen came together. I mean, it must have been a scary moment for Rosberg thinking about it. If Verstappen really had crashed into him, so that it was race-ending for him, it would have been a very, very a huge blow for his championship hopes. But as ever, Verstappen timed it perfectly, and so they only touched wheels, so no carbon fiber loss there. But how did you see that incident? I mean, again, we see, as Hamilton did and a lot of other drivers did previously in the season, he really pushed Rosberg off the track, basically, there, didn't he?
Yeah, I when that happened, I was like, "Oh no, it's Verstappen. He's not gonna care what he does." No offense to any Verstappen fans out there, but yeah, I think the reason he went so wide is because he actually locked up as well, and couldn't really control what he was doing, to be honest. And yeah, I think it was good in the end that they all got through, because if Rosberg wants to win the championship, he just needs to stay out of trouble. That's what he, like, if he gets beyond turn one, then, you know, where he needs to be, then he should be fine. But yeah, stuff like that, he was very close to damaging his championship hopes there in turn one. But yeah, he got through it fine, as did Verstappen.
Yeah, so now enough for turn one. Going to turn two, or exit of turn two. We in the live view we just saw the wide view of the straight, and suddenly we see a huge cloud of smoke and dirt flying up in the back, and it was Fernando Alonso saving the car from spinning out. Later on we got the replay that actually he was alongside Sainz, and we talked about it in the episode of the USGP, and there they were really racing, and we talked about that Alonso was the hero of Sainz's childhood, and now he pushed his hero off the track.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm pretty sure he didn't know he was there.
You think so?
Yeah, Sainz, to me, he's not the kind of driver, that kind of driver that would push someone off the track, and he's especially not the kind of driver that would push his his childhood hero off the track. Although that when he's racing an F1 car, you know, that might go out of his head. He just think he's racing other drivers regardless of who they are. But I don't think he did it intentionally. I'm pretty sure he didn't know Alonso was there. But yeah, it was actually pretty scary when I seen the all the dust and dirt get scooped up, because I knew someone had gone onto the grass and I could sort of see a car swerve a little bit, and I thought it was going to spin round in front of the other cars, and I thought there was going to be a huge crash. But Alonso, when I seen the onboard of Alonso, I was actually really impressed. He controlled the car very, very well, and that's what you expect from a double world champion.
Yeah, but I mean, he's got experience with it. When was it? Monza, Curva Grande, Vettel, you know? Where he was also, he wasn't only in the grass, he was in the gravel and saved the car at about 320 kph or something. So that was easy. That was easy for him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Other than that, there was another turn two incident. Basically just a lot of cars and a narrow part of the track. I mean, who was involved? It was Gutierrez, I think. It was Sauber. And, of course, Pascal Wehrlein, who crashed out. Did you think that there was anyone at fault? Or, yeah, in my opinion, it was just a racing incident, just too many cars for one corner.
Yeah, I agree. That corner, I think it's turn three, was it? Or I can't remember what corner it was.
Yeah, but, turn three, yes.
Yeah, it was it's quite a tight corner anyway. And, yeah, it was all three of them trying to fit into it. It wasn't really going to happen. So I don't think anyone was at fault. Yeah, unfortunately, Wehrlein just came out of it the worst, which is a shame after he showed good pace in qualifying, getting out of Q1 again. So, yeah, that was very unfortunate for him.
Well, you say it was unfortunate. If you want to see it in a positive way, he decided very early to go out of a very boring race. Let's put it like that, because after the first lap and, of course, the safety car and so on, it was a very, very boring kind of race, let's say it like that. But, I mean, you as a listener, you might already notice it. We are 18 minutes in and we only covered three turns of the race, so there's not too much to come in the middle. As I said, the overtaking was very difficult. I mean, you could see Paris being stuck for basically half the
whole race.
or the whole race. Behind the Williams of Felipe Massa, and he was just not able to overtake him. So overtaking very difficult. Some different strategies, kind of, not really. I mean, only Ferrari tried something very stupid with Kimi Raikkonen, of course. What was that actually? I mean, what was Ferrari thinking there again? Of course, we just skip to the last third of the race, I would say, because in the middle there didn't really happen anything. I mean, yeah, of course the cars pitted. Or would you want to add anything from the middle of the race?
I think probably the less said about the middle of the race the better, because that's how boring it was.
Good decision.
So yeah.
Yeah, so basically Vettel stayed out very long on a set of soft tires, which was quite interesting. I mean, I looked at the lap times on live timing, and he was the lap times on a really worn set of soft tires were really, really good. They were up, or they were basically equal to what Hamilton was doing on the medium tires. So it was really good. And then he pitted, he closed the gap to Raikkonen, who pitted earlier. And then Ferrari, I don't know, didn't they want to tell Raikkonen to move over or what? But then they pitted him. And in my opinion, the strategy didn't make any sense at all, did it?
No, it didn't, and I think they probably should have known that after they've seen how well Vettel's tires held up.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand that pit stop at all. Maybe, I don't know, just trying something different or whatever, but yeah, it didn't work whatsoever, and he finished quite far away from Vettel.
Yeah, at least he managed to get Hülkenberg, so at least he didn't lose any position.
Yeah, which is something to salvage.
But again, I mean, we've talked about it a lot this season, and again, another bad strategy decision of Ferrari. I mean, they should hire a good strategist.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on inside that team, in terms of strategy. We've said it many times before.
Yeah.
They're throwing away points. They really are. They've thrown away race victories.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, of course, not this weekend, but for example, Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Australia.
Yeah.
It's a big mess, that team right now. A big mess.
But yeah, after Vettel was released from Raikkonen, he started really closing the gap to Verstappen, and Ricciardo was closing the gap to Vettel and Verstappen. So basically, all three cars came closer and closer together. And it was, I think, the second to last lap or something. Vettel really was on the gearbox of Verstappen. Opened the DRS on the main straight. He really had a chance to attack him. Verstappen covered the inside line, and he did this basically, in my opinion. I really compared Hamilton's lockup and Verstappen's lockup, and it was amazing. I mean, it was nearly the same point where they locked up, and also the line they took through the cars, it was so similar. So basically, he did a Hamilton in that situation, cut through turn 2 and 3 basically, and retained the position in front of Vettel. Let's talk about it that for, about that first. How did you see that? Should he have slowed down? Should Vettel have P3 at that point?
This is when Verstappen went to overtake Vettel, or
no, when Verstappen outbraked himself and locked the tire and went to through turn 2 and 3.
I think that situation kind of was what the big talking point of the after the race, because probably there wasn't really that much else to talk about, but I think he definitely gained something.
Yeah, of course.
Sort of advantage. And I think Vettel, Verstappen, he did gain an advantage, and Vettel
but,
was...
But on the other hand, he was in front on the braking, and he just did the same thing as Hamilton did, so...
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a personal opinion, I think, I'm not really sure, to be honest, because, actually, Verstappen gained that advantage, and when that happens, it's gotta be, something's gotta, you can't just let it go, oh, that's fine, you know, carry on, because it's not in the sporting regulations that that's allowed, so... Yeah, I think something had to be brought in there.
But why? But why does Verstappen get a penalty? Well, basically, Verstappen got a penalty, of course, for gaining an advantage there and staying in front of Vettel. But why does he get a penalty and Hamilton not? Of course, we discussed it. But I mean, the consistency is everything. I mean, of course, you can't really compare it with football, because there's every foul is different and so on, but at least if the last man fouls another player, it's a red card, for example. So that's consistency. But in Formula One, we don't have consistency at all. I mean, we talked about it in terms of track limits at the USGP.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, one thing that came to my mind last night about why they didn't penalise Hamilton, and this was before I read about how he didn't lift off or how he lifted off or whatever. One thing I thought of was, maybe are the stewards afraid to interfere with that title battle?
That's also what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's because interfering with that would upset a lot of people, and people would say, oh, you're ruining the battle or whatever. But I mean, rules are rules. I mean, rules are there to be kept, not broken.
just imagine, Twitter would have gone mad after that decision.
It would have been absolutely like carnage. I have a feeling that stewards and are kind of afraid to get involved with that battle. I mean, fair enough, we've never really seen an incident like that before where we thought, oh, they should have been penalised or they shouldn't have been penalised for a long time. I think Austria, well, I think was the last time, maybe.
Yeah.
With Rosberg's incidents, I can't think of any other one. But I think some stewards could be afraid to interfere with that title battle. But I mean, if you can't take advantage of that, if you're a driver, let's say, if you're Lewis Hamilton, you can't expect that there. I'm not saying he is, but just for example, you know, he can't expect to get any special treatment, or neither Rosberg as well, because they're fighting for a championship. And I think the same rule should apply whether you're fighting for first position or 22nd position. And it's that inconsistency that's really confusing a lot of people and angering them as well. We saw it with track limits, like you said, and now the penalty system, it's a bit messy and scruffy. And maybe if they had, you know, something to explain it a little bit better, then great. But to the you know, your average viewer, you're kind of just seeing a lot of inconsistency, and it doesn't go down well.
Yeah, and talking about penalties, or even before we talk about that, to all listeners that are still with us, thank you very much for listening. We're now reaching the half an hour mark, and there's still so much to talk about. So if you like, go and get yourself a drink or something and just enjoy it. This week it won't be a 35-minute episode or something. I think there's still a lot to talk about. Talking about penalties after the Verstappen and Vettel incident, Verstappen really slowed Vettel down, or both slowed down due to fighting each other, and Ricciardo got really close, and I think it was actually quite after or directly after the off of Verstappen in turn 2 and 3, where Ricciardo was then again very close behind Vettel. And had DRS on the second straight, tried to overtake him, went for the left side, and then Vettel decided to try a Max Verstappen, but he executed it in a pretty bad way, in my opinion. And also, of course, the rules were clarified after the Japanese GP that you can't move under braking, and Vettel did move under braking, didn't he?
He did, and that's what really, really confuses me, because Vettel was one of the leading people who wanted that rule brought in. So, and then he goes and does it. I don't know. There wasn't really any incident there, but that was very strange. I didn't really know what he was thinking. It was actually pretty good car control from the two of them. When they hit wheels, boat locking up. It was nice actually, because we know the rivalry they had in 2014 when Ricciardo came in and outperformed Vettel. So yeah, it was nice for them to see them go wheel to wheel like that. But yeah, I don't get why he moved over under braking, seeing as he wanted that rule removed. Vettel Yeah, he had a. After that, he had a, well, what I can only describe as a meltdown.
Yeah, and
After
actually
that.
and actually talking about the move, I mean, it was very badly executed. I mean, Verstappen, I think, said it in an interview after the race. I mean, Verstappen really did it so that it was in the last moment or something, and or so that he didn't really touch anyone else, and it was just so that the other driver had to, yeah, had to do a minor adjustment in his braking line, and so it just offset the other driver a little bit, but still both cars were, well, let's say most of the time were able to do the corner. But yeah, Vettel actually, yeah, continued going left, and actually that, so they touched wheels, so it was not only forbidden, and as you said, he was one of the more vocal drivers, so that they brought in that rule. And yeah, that's, you could argue that he hurt himself there. But yeah, after the first incident, of course, after that cut off Verstappen in turn two and three, yeah, he really had a meltdown. I mean, if you wanted to quote what he said, you just have to get out the bleep machine and put the button a lot of times, and then you would end up with what he said.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think some of the stuff he said was quite out of line. Some of the stuff he said about Charlie Whiting was,
Yeah,
well, some of the
he.
stuff he said to Charlie Whiting. I'll
Yeah.
not repeat it here.
I mean, did you
But
hear did you hear the full team radio? I mean, there was a clip online, 1 minute and 10 seconds or something, where they really showed the whole team radio conversation from the beginning to the end.
I think it was that where the team were just telling him to calm down and stuff, or I think I seen that one.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
that was part of it. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, go on.
I mean, it was, as you said, it was very inappropriate. I mean, not only in terms of calling Max Verstappen a beep, you know, he said he's a beep, he's a beeping beep, you know, but or calling or saying that Charlie Whiting should beep off and so on and so on. I mean, of course, there are a lot of emotions coming up in the car and a lot of adrenaline. I mean, we saw it with Alonso and Suzuka 2015 GP2 engine and so on. But come
Yeah, but that
on,
was
I
a
mean,
whole, this is a whole other level.
yeah. I mean, you have to have some kind of control in the car, don't you? I mean, in my opinion, it wasn't only adrenaline. He was seriously angry.
Yeah, he was, and I think it was probably an outburst of like emotions that's been building up throughout the whole season.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been left disappointed the whole season. How many podiums did he got last year? Was it 13 podiums or
Yeah, I think
something?
13.
And this year he only has six. So and like, yeah, I think I spoke about this in the last podcast episode that we did. But Vettel, expected this year to be the year when Ferrari stepped up and were the front running team. And yeah, he's just, I don't know, he's left disappointed. And Vettel is a he's a great driver. I mean, he's a four-time world champion. He's
Yeah.
a very good driver, and I think what he experienced, I think he's still suffering from what he experienced at Red Bull. I mean, winning four consecutive championships and then getting used to all that glory, and now having this slump where he, like is fighting for podiums and usually doesn't come off very well in that fight. I think it's just a build up of emotions that's been, accumulating this season, and he just had a massive outburst at that Grand Prix. And we know Vettel can be quite angry on the radio anyway, and we've seen that before, but nothing to that extent. But he did apologize after the race to Charlie Whiting and all that. So he didn't really mean it. But yeah, it was just, I think it was kind of just a heat, well, it was a heat in the moment thing that he
Yeah.
said, but like I said, it was a burst of emotions that have been built up.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, it's really a difficult season with Ferrari. I mean, it started so well with actually winning the second race in Malaysia 2015. But yeah, after that, especially this season, I mean, there's so much pressure on Ferrari, and now with James Allison leaving the team, or well, he left the team a few months ago. All those issues, pit stops, and strategy, and yeah, him not being able to perform in qualifying due to various issues. I mean, it's really, really difficult for him at the moment, and yeah, I definitely can understand some frustration. But on the other hand, you really have to, especially if you talk to someone like Charlie Whiting, who isn't just some guy who presses the start button, you know. I mean, he's been in the sport for so long, and he's such a great personality, actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you would expect something a bit more mature of a four-time world champion.
Yeah, definitely, and he's one of the veterans in the sport, you could say. And there's a lot of drivers in the sport now that are quite younger than him.
That's awesome.
The frustration that he has in the car is built into his style, but I think yesterday it was just kind of out of line, and I don't think we'll see that kind of outburst again. We'll definitely see him complaining about traffic and, you know, blue flags and everything again. You can count on that, absolutely. Yes. But I think that kind of outburst we won't see again. I think he realized he messed up on that part.
Yeah, definitely. I think so too. And yeah, at least a very good gesture of him to go to Charlie straight after the race and apologize. But yeah, what those two laps at the end meant for us was that Verstappen went to the podium, and then he got called back from the podium. I think I've never seen anything like that a driver got called down from the podium and another driver going up. And in the end, Vettel was the wrong guy again to be on the podium, because yeah, he got a 10-second penalty for moving under braking. Deserved, in my opinion. And so Daniel Ricciardo was the man in P3.
Yeah, it was all
so three drivers in P3.
it was quite well, I mean, if you want to call it exciting, because yeah, I've never really seen anything like that before, like you said.
You know what was exciting? Exciting was watching all the post-race interviews of Verstappen, Ricciardo, and Vettel. That was exciting. Did you see them?
No, I didn't see them.
You must watch the post-race interview of Verstappen. It was hilarious. Well, he really said something like, Vettel, he just can't control himself. He should go back to school to learn some words and say bad words to Charlie Whiting, and he can't do the moving under braking, and even I do it better, and so on and so on. It was quite funny.
Yeah, actually, I think I did see that, and I seen a tweet here about the three drivers on the podium, and this is gonna wreck your head and the head of whoever's listening here. So basically, in the end, it was fourth was third, except he was fifth, because fifth was third and third was fourth. Now, if that's not confusing, I don't know what is.
I think we'll leave it with that. And we talk about our driver of the weekend.
Driver of the weekend. We discuss which driver showed the best performances in practice, quali, and race.
So, driver of the weekend. Well, counting the whole weekend in, of course it wasn't Rosberg, not at all. Who would you say is your driver of the weekend? Of course, driver of the day for the race was Sebastian Vettel. He was voted by the fans, not Max Verstappen, which
surprising.
what's going on there? I mean, quite surprising. And would you say Verstappen is your driver of the weekend?
No. people deserve mentions are Hamilton. Hamilton, you know, he was consistent throughout the whole weekend. He outperformed everybody and he did a good job. Marcus Ericsson,
except for turn one, of course.
Yeah, except for that. Marcus Ericsson, who once again got out of Q1 like last weekend, you know, finished P11, even better than his P13 last weekend. But this week, I'm actually going to give my driver of the weekend to Nico Hülkenberg. I think he did a great job. He had qualified both Ferraris. That's incredible. I mean, I know the Ferraris are struggling, but a Force India does not have more raw pace than a Ferrari.
No.
His performance in qualifying was great. He was up in P4, I think, at one point in the race. And then, he was just caught up by different drivers. And then him and Raikkonen, unfortunately, made a bit of contact when Raikkonen was going to overtake him and he was spun around. I think he did a... Ever since his announcement from Renault, he's really come alive. And he really thinks it's going to be a good move for him and a positive move for his career. And I think this weekend he performed very, very well. And yeah, for that reason, he is my driver of the weekend.
That's quite annoying because he was on the top of my list as well.
So I've just stolen all your words, so...
Yeah. but I would also count Ricardo in. Of course, I would also go for Hülkenberg as the driver of the weekend. Brilliant, brilliant weekend for him. Qualifying race, very good. But Ricardo also, I mean, he ended up in P3, of course. Really tried a very, very dangerous move on Vettel, and I think it was just prevented by Vettel moving over. Otherwise, I think he would have gotten him. And yeah, I think generally it was quite a good weekend. So yeah, I still go with Hülkenberg, but as I said, Ricardo, I just want to mention him as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the strategy that Ricardo played was it was quite ambitious, but it worked. I mean, he got on the podium at the end of the day, and definitely Ricardo had a good weekend.
Yeah, so again, or not again, but we somehow agree on the driver of the weekend, which is very unusual. And so, anything else to take from this weekend other than we need some clarification on penalties and also need to teach some drivers lessons how to communicate to the race director?
Overall it was
a so-so race.
It was a boring race, but it was an interesting weekend of Formula One, I think.
Yeah, let's leave it at that. Thank you very much for listening for 44 minutes, a very long episode. But of course, with a boring race, you have to talk more about it to make it a little bit more interesting. So thank you very much for sticking with us. And of course, next week, we will be back with more F1 news for you. So see you then. Wherever you are listening, we would really appreciate your feedback by commenting or rating the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.